Hello and welcome to the Houston Vineyard Podcast. We sincerely hope that this message is a blessing to you. Enjoy.
Good morning. I always get a choice of a head mic or a handheld mic. And I like to move. Some of you who know me know that. And so, I don't know, for some reason I like handheld better. So I'm trying to do communion. Oh, today's communion Sunday. So if you want to sneak over and grab something while I'm preaching, it would be great. No one will notice. So Beauty for Ashes, we're in Beauty for Ashes today, and my assignment was the first part of Hebrews 12, so we're going to be in Hebrews today, and it's good to be with you. And this is great. We have a lot of, you've heard a lot of amazing speakers in this church. I really love Josh. I love his generation of lead pastors who really work on teaching teams and preaching teams, and so we have some amazing people, and I'm glad I get to share with you today. You know, God is here. God is here, and we're going to take communion at the end, and so I just want you to begin to think about that. He's here. He is here for you. So I'm going to give a background before going into Hebrews 12, Hebrews 11. Not quite sure who wrote Hebrews, not quite sure exactly who it was intended for. Some think of it as maybe an epistle to the early Christians, all of whom were former Hebrews, much like Paul wrote his epistle to the early church, and that's known as Romans. But Hebrews 11:1 starts out by saying, now faith is confidence in what we hope for and assurance about what we do not see. Faith. Our friend Eugene Peterson, in his version called The Message, says it's our handle on what we can't see. We live in a moment when we can't see most of everything. We don't know most of everything. Our lives are full. Our culture is full. Our nation is full. Our world is full of unknowns. And we wonder what's next. It is a time to remember that our connection to God is through faith. The circumstances we're experiencing are unique to us. But our need from faith is not new. This whole deal was set up based on God's people believing in Him, trusting in Him, walking with Him, living their lives out in faith. It's all about faith. And so the writer of Hebrews goes on in Hebrews 11. In fact, this chapter is maybe sort of colloquially known as the heroes of faith. It's not an exhaustive list like most things in the Bible. The Bible is not an exhaustive list of anything, but it was written by a multitude of writers across time, and sometimes we wrestle with that. The best thing, I went back to seminary after 35 years, and the best thing I got out of it was the Bible is just like Jesus. Totally divine and totally human. Having said that, let's walk through this list of heroes. And some of us here are old enough to remember a personality by the name of Paul Harvey. Paul Harvey. And his famous tagline was, And now the rest of the story. And so as we walk through this list of heroes of faith, I want to tell us just a little bit on each one, a little bit about the rest of their story. They are not one-dimensional people, just like you and I. We may know a little bit about each other, but there's a lot we don't know about each other. Our lives are complex. Our lives are nuanced. Our lives are full of many factors and many facets that only God completely understands. So let's walk through this and let's hear the rest of the story. It says, by faith is mentioned 18 times, typically with a name associated with it, a couple of places, a group of people. It says, by faith, Abel brought God a better offering than Cain did. And he was murdered by his jealous brother. By faith, Enoch was taken from this life so that he did not experience death. And that's all we know about Enoch. By faith, Noah, when warned about things not yet seen in holy fear, built an ark to save his family. And he embarrassed himself by getting drunk on new wine. By faith, Abraham, when called to go to a place he would later receive as his inheritance, obeyed and went, even though he did not know where he was going. Abraham, the father of faith. And when he got in a bind, he gave his wife Sarah to King Abimelech. And by faith, even Sarah, who was past childbearing age and was enabled to bear children because she considered him faithful, who had made the promise. And Sandy did an awesome job preaching about this. And she came up with the plan, I have to help God out to fulfill his promise. Sarah came up with the idea of Hagar, a surrogate son for Abraham, and then her subsequent horrible ill-treatment of Hagar and Ishmael. By faith, Isaac blessed Jacob and Esau in regard to their future, and his father had offered him up as human sacrifice. By faith, Jacob, when he was dying, he blessed each of Joseph's sons and worshiped as he leaned on the top of his staff, and he played an active role in the deceptive plan of his mother to dupe his father and steal the inheritance blessing from his older brother. By faith, Joseph, when his end was near, spoke about the exodus of the Israelites from Egypt and gave instructions concerning the burial of his bones and growing up in a family of jealous older stepbrothers who sought to murder him, but then found a way out and only sold him into slavery. By faith, Moses' parents hid him for 3 months after he was born because they saw he was no ordinary child and they were not afraid of the king's edict. Can you imagine what it would be like living in such a time as that? And by faith, Moses, when he had grown up, he refused to be known as the son of Pharaoh's daughter, and how he took justice into his own hands and murdered an Egyptian. By faith, the people passed through the Red Sea as on dry land, but when the Egyptians tried to do so, they were drowned. Yes, and those very same people complained and threatened their own leaders with violence. By faith, the prostitute Rahab, because she welcomed the spies, was not killed with those who were disobedient. And throughout Scripture, Rahab is professionally known. And what more shall I say? I do not have time to tell about Gideon. Gideon, who created an object of idolatry out of the spoils of God's victory. Barak, who refused to obey God unless Deborah personally accompanied him into battle. Samson, his amazing, miraculous, undisciplined strength and appetites. And Jephthah, how his foolish vow devastated his daughter's future. About David, a man after God's own heart. Bathsheba and Uriah. But beyond that, his own children, Tamar, Amnon, and Absalom. And Samuel, whose sons lived such a sensual, debaucherous lifestyle that the people came and say, "We want a king." Now, my point in all this is not to sully our heroes. You know, as human beings, we wrestle with the rest of the story. We wrestle with the rest of the story in our own lives, in our families' lives, maybe in the lives of a locale, a country, a generation. My point this morning is not to make this gritty, not to make this R-rated. My point this morning is to simply say it's part of the story. It's part of the story. The ugly parts of my life are part of the story. And Josh mentioned this about, you know, the Meshach, Shadrach, Abednego, and flannel graphs, you know. Hey, don't knock flannel graphs. For most people in my generation, what we know about God, we learn through a flannel graph and a kid's song. Don't knock flannel graphs. And if I may say something as a person who's not as good looking as most of you, don't knock old school. You know, sometimes it still works. And actually, this morning, this is old school. This is like the oldest school that we're going to land on. So my point this morning is not to get gritty and not to tear down. And we wrestle with this, you know. We wrestle with, boy, if I can find something about you that's not 100% right, then I can just like cross you off my list. When the reality is, we don't want anybody to treat us that way. I mean, I want you to have all the grace and mercy and understanding and the world for me. But boy, what is it about my fallen humanity? Oh, man, but I can get so legalistic and nitpicky about you. So the point, again, is not to be gritty. It's not to... But just to say it's part of the story. It's part of their story. And yet, God still used them and used their elements. And maybe this chapter 11 is not about the heroes of faith. Maybe it's about the God of faith. Amen. Who used imperfect people. Who did things in their lives. Every person who has ever lived would look back on their life and say, "Ooh, I don't want you to know about that. Ooh, I don't want my mother to know about that." The God of faith. So our humanity is we always focus on the person rather than the God the person had faith in. And so when a person, you know, has a something comes to light, you know. Something falls apart. You know, we just say, "Well, another one bites the dust. I always knew there was something wrong with them." Well, maybe what you know is, you know, they're just human beings. And I'm not justifying and I'm not excusing what's not right. But I'm simply trying to get us to understand, folks, listen. Listen. We live in an imperfect world made up of imperfect people, just like you and me. And it's always been that way. These people in the Bible dressed different, talked different, had different favorite foods, maybe lived in a different climate, but they were a lot like you and me. So, beauty for ashes. Is that right? Beauty for ashes? Yes. How many of you heard of Rick Warren? Rick Warren, famous church planner, pastor, And Rick used to think of Beauty and Ashes or Battles and Struggles as being like a linear series of events, you know, battles and blessing and battles and blessing, valleys and mountaintops. And he wrote a book called The Purpose-Driven Life. And that book was such a phenomenal success that Rick instantly, but in a short amount of time, became a multimillionaire. So much so that he paid back every dollar the church had ever paid him, and he never took another dollar from pastoring his church. Man, if we could just get, I just knew how to write a book. And he had instant influence. I mean, he was a well-known, you know, pastor, but he became known nationally and internationally. You know, we would say in the halls of Christendom, wow, what a success, amazing. And just so happens at the very same time, his wife was diagnosed with breast cancer. Kind of works that way, doesn't it? And he said, you know what? Instead of it being a series of battles and blessings and battles and blessings, he said, it's really like two tracks. And blessings are going on one track and battles are going on the other. And it's always happening at the same time. In fact, I thought about this, and I'm not a big science guy, but I thought about the DNA helix, which is kind of like a ladder that kind of spirals around, you know? And my point this morning is to say beauty and ashes and blessings and battle and miracles and messiness always coexist. They always coexist. No matter how much I don't want it to be that way, you know, I just want to be hallelujah, hallelujah all the time. And parts of the church kind of focus on that. But that's not reality. It's not life. It's not your life. It's not my life. It's not anybody's life outside these doors or around this globe. That's not the way life is in a fallen world. It is always going on at the same time. And because of that, I am prone to just want to focus on beauty and deny the ashes. Or to focus on the ashes and say, God has left the building. God has left my life. God has forsaken me. It's all nothing. Again, our fallen humanity. My fallen humanity. Okay, so what are we to learn from these personalities of faith, we'll call them? Hebrews 11:39 says, these were all commended for their faith, yet none of them received what had been promised, since God had planned something better for us, so that only together with us would they be made perfect. Again, our friend Eugene Peterson in his message says, not one of these people, even though their lives of faith were exemplary, got their hands on what was promised. God had a better plan for us, that their faith and our faith would come together to make one completed whole. Their lives of faith not complete apart from ours. Friends, the people of God are connected. And you say, well, what does that matter? Why is that important? It's important that I gain a perspective beyond my own. It's important that I acknowledge a lack of understanding beyond my own. It's important that I see there's a context beyond my context. It's important that I have the opportunity to connect with God, who alone knows it all and understands it all and has been actively engaged in the life of his people throughout the centuries. I know we've said, I've been on numerous podcasts, I've said it myself, numerous things, how hard the last couple of years have been. Yes, they have been. But this isn't the first time there's been hard times. This isn't the first time it's been hard times for God's people. It's not the first time things didn't make sense. This isn't the first time that we wondered, how do we go forward? It says, in the first time we wondered, how are we going to survive? How's the church going to survive? How's Jesus going to survive? I know that comment doesn't make any sense, but I think that sometimes. Like, Lord, I know you know what you're supposed to be doing, but I don't see it. I don't get it. I don't understand it. And because I don't, I'm prone to think, well, I'm not so sure you know what you're doing. Doesn't that sound ridiculous? But I talk that way in my head. You don't. I do. And then the writer goes on to say, therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, again, these pioneers, these veterans, they're cheering us on. I don't know. We often wonder, you know, wherever you go now, we'll call it heaven, but it's a temporary place. You know, the real payoff is when Jesus comes back and it's the new heavens and the new earth and the redemption of everything. And I like that. But wherever you go in the meantime, we have all sorts of wonderments and notions about what are people doing? What's it like? You know, when you first get there, what are you going to feel? What are you going to sense? And, you know, sometimes we're kind of snarky, like, well, I got a lot of questions I want to ask Jesus about. Usually when I'm in one of those snarky moods. I don't know what we're going to be doing, but there is this sense that whatever it's like there, it's so different than here. That's like, whatever happened here doesn't matter there. I just made that up. Does that even make sense? That's not in my notes. But I do think I think there's a sense that they would say, oh, you don't know what it's like. You don't know what you don't know. You don't know what God's going to do next. You don't know what's going to come from this. How many times have you said, and I've said, what good could come from this? What could God possibly do out of this or get out of this? I've said it many, many times, along with other amazingly brilliant things. Again, when I'm not thinking right, when I'm not seeing right, and I'm just letting off steam to God, He's okay with that. But I think they're cheering us on, saying, oh, but here's the thing. Here's the thing. And well, let's get to it. I have to be careful with this statement because it can sound kind of snide. It's not about me. And with respect, it's not about you. And what I mean by that is that if everything is about what I think and how I perceive it, and how I experience it, if that's my universe, then it's a construct of my own imagination. It's not reality. I'm no big astronomy buff. Astronomy, right? That's the study of stars. Astronomy, not astrology, right? That's something different. Astronomy. And you see these pictures of these telescopes. I mean, not of the telescope, but the pictures the telescope takes, right? And you see these amazing stars and galaxies and all this stuff, and I'm like, God, you made that? I mean, that's real? You mean that's not like Photoshop? That's not like make-believe? That's not like CG? Like, that's real? That's real? And again, I'm not an astronomy buff. But I need to be reminded that there's a lot more out there than I have a clue about. And I need that to sort of at least open my perspective that if I don't know about that, what else don't I know about? So now we go in here. So, okay, so what do I do with this? So I look at these personalities. I focus on the God of faith. So that it changes my perspective. Now what do I do? What do I do next? Therefore, you know, in summation, okay, now we're back to Hebrews 12. Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. Now, I don't know what kind of athlete the writer of Hebrews was. He was using the imagery here, kind of track and field athletics. And I don't know if you're into athletics or sports or anything like that. But it's an analogy maybe we can kind of grasp at. You know, in any athletic contest, especially if it's built for speed and efficiency, it's about paring down. You know, the Message talks about strip down and start running. You know, how many of you have seen Top Gun, Maverick, Top Gun? It's okay, you can admit it. Okay, again, I don't know whether you like the movie or not. I'm just going to confess to you. The most amazing takeaway from that movie was Tom Cruise on that beach scene. When they're playing football, that man is 60-something years old, and unless that was all Photoshop, I was like, dude, whatever you're doing, keep doing it. You know, when you're younger, things like, you know, healing and health and, you know, go for it and bravado and all that stuff, it's stuff of youth. And then you go down the road a bit, you get beat up a bit, you have some battle scars, you have sickness, you have tragedy, you have setbacks, you have hurts, you have failures, you have disappointments. Go, I don't know about this. And this stripping down thing, I've seen the mirror. You don't want to be seeing any of this. But the analogy is, start running, and here's the key, and the message is, and never quit. I thought about that. How many times have you quit? I can't tell you how many times I've quit. I mean, I can't tell you how many times as a pastor I've quit. I can't tell you how many times I've said, God, get anybody else to do this. I don't want to do this. You should know by now I'm no good at this. Everybody else knows I'm no good at it. Why don't you see that? Think of it like, those of you who know me, like, I don't like water because there's things that swim in the water that have teeth. I don't like water. Sometimes not even swimming pool water. But you think you've seen ships, they're in distress, and they start jettisoning cargo. What can we get rid of? We've got some sailors right here, and Bill Meade, wherever Bill Meade is. You know, what can we get rid of that we don't have to have in rough seas? And these are rough seas. So maybe we need to think about, not that it's a bad thing, an evil thing. In fact, that's often the hard thing. These are good things. That maybe these things are entangling me, keeping me from pursuing God. And then this last tagline, and then we're going to wrap up. And let us run with perseverance the race that is marked out for us. Now, in general, the church, you know, but... You know, sometimes we get into this. I'm trying to run your race, you're trying to run my race, or we're trying to run somebody else's race. And there are lots of folks that say, this is the race. Isn't there a popular show that says, This is the Way? Star Wars, Mandalorian, This is the Way. I'm trying to be hip and cool here. You guys aren't helping me. You have no idea how long I practiced that. You're like, oh, this is the race. Everybody's got to get in this race. No, 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 no. This is the race. This is the race we got to get in. Rather than, what is the race God has asked me to run? What is the race God has asked you to run? Run that race. Run that race. Now, if we were to stop here, we'd say, well, that's great, Harry. That's some great athletic imagery. And if I look like Tom Cruise on a beach, you know, that might really be helpful. But there's something else we need here. There's something else we need here. There's something else here that I need, that you need, that we all need, that if we're not careful, it's really easy to miss. Hebrews 12:2. Fixing our eyes on Jesus. Keeping our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of our faith. Consider him who endured such oppression from sinners so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. The way you don't quit is you don't lose heart. As long as you have hope. But hope has to be affixed into something or someone. And that something or someone is Jesus. Not the Jesus I want. Not the version of Jesus I prefer. But just Jesus. Just Jesus. Okay, I'm going to wrap up with a story. I'll invite the worship team to come on back. And I want to wrap up with a short story. Okay? I've been saving it. Between my sixth grade and seventh grade year, I and two of my siblings went to live with my grandparents in the rural part of southwest Louisiana. And my granddad's name was Harry Tracy Stamps, my namesake. I was named after my maternal grandfather and my paternal grandfather. So Harry from Harry, and my middle name's Paul, Paul from my dad's dad. Harry Tracy Stamps. So I was a suburban kid from Massapequa, Long Island. I'm 11, 12 years old. I'm going to live in the rural community outside Maryville, Louisiana. It was a different universe. It was different. And I would just follow Granddad all day. And I was a curious kid, and I was probably a very annoying kid because I asked lots of questions. And Granddad was a great guy. He was thoughtful. He was kind. He was just an ordinary, hardworking guy. He read his Bible at night, and he played his fiddle. But anyhow, I found out that Granddad was known for his plowing skills. Plowing. He had a garden of a couple of acres. Again, I'm from the suburbs. I don't know one end of the plow from another. And I'm trying to think, you know, how do you draw this out? How do you line this out? How do you measure it? And Granddad started out plowing with mules. So, I mean, you got the plow and you got the mules. I don't know, maybe one's called a Jack and one's called a Jenny. I don't know. And then technology moves forward and now he's got a tractor. But I still was like, how do you plow such straight lines? So much so that a regional tree farm contracted with him and said, we want you to prepare the fields before we plant the trees. And Granddad called me Sonny. He'd say, Sonny, when you're going to plow, you got to find something across the field that doesn't move. And that's what you got to focus your eyes on. And then you plow to it. And then you turn around, you pick out something across the field, and you plow to it. You know, I wish I had something more dramatic and more exciting and more techno for you than plowing. But you know, following Jesus is a lot like that. And I'm not saying he's like not moving, like he's stuck in time and irrelevant. But he is the only person that is worthy of you and I fixing our eyes on. Getting our eyes back on. Keeping our eyes on. Through sickness and health. Through financial setbacks and surplus. You know, it's good to keep your eyes on Jesus when things are going good. When you think, oh, you know, I got this now. I got this. I figured it out. I did it. You know, and then he's saying, oh, you better keep your eyes on me, Harry. Because you know what's about to happen, don't you? Big flop, a big fall. But when things are hard and things are confusing and things don't make sense and, you know, what's it all about? It's time to get my eyes back on Jesus. Jesus, where are you going? Jesus, what are you doing? Jesus, what are you wanting to do in me? You know, I don't know if it's because I'm German. I don't know why, but I like to do things for Jesus. And Jesus often has to say, Harry, it's about what I want to do in you, not what you're going to do for me. You see, got to keep our eyes on Jesus. So this morning, we're going to do communion. And so... Everybody got their communion?